webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Hello, this is Daniel Rouse. Would you welcome with me again the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Lilborn Williams?
Hello, D.T. Rouse.
How are you doing on this fine, wonderful Friday the 13th?
Yes, exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Friday.
It is a Friday.
Yes, it is Friday the 13th. And I think we have Jason on with us today.
I think I can hear that chainsaw running in the background.
Ooh, there it is.
Yeah, big hello to our friend hailing from the great nation of Spain.
I changed it up again.
And we don't know where he'll be next week, so we'll just...
No, I tell you what, guys, I am done traveling. I don't ever want to see an airplane ever again.
Well, there for a while, you certainly were a nomad. I remember us having that conversation and me sharing with you how I had been pretty much a nomad. I don't get attached to places. When I walk out of a house that I've either sold or moved, I've seen people go through these real attachment things and just mourning. I'm turning the door the last time. Oh, I'm shutting the gate. It's like, I lock the door and I shut the gate. It's done. You know, yeah. I don't. So Ethan said that at that time, he said he thought he was kind of more that way. And since that time, he has absolutely proven he is nomadic. So
I've been everywhere, man.
Yeah.
Now, Daniel, running out of juice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, after a while, airplanes, I remember the airplane days. Oh goodness. It just seemed that I was in the air more than I was there. So, and you know, if you don't learn to chillax and go with the flow of the air, it becomes very irritating, especially when you have a fear of flying, which I certainly did. And traveling is fine now. So Daniel, how are you doing?
I am doing wonderful. We are at, you know, how can I not be? The sun is shining here. We're starting to see sun, so we're getting some vitamin D, and everyone's feeling a little happier than they usually are.
Wonderful.
That's the joy of living up in the Northland here. But yeah, we're starting to see some good weather, and that always brings out smiles on people's faces.
I meant to ask you before I've interrupted you. I was going to ask you, I looked on Facebook, and I now know how to go on and look off the dashboard. And it says that we've had over 7,000 visits to our Facebook page in the last 28 days.
Yeah. Wow. So part of that is because you've been busy putting out content. You've been sending me a lot of articles that you have put together. And so the more we post, the more people engage.
Wow.
And yeah, our engagement has definitely gone up, because I think for the last 3 weeks now, we have been posting every single day. And right now, even as we speak, the last post for the conference from last week has gone out. And then starting again tomorrow, we've got another, I don't know, maybe about 10 more articles coming out about this series on the Gospel of Peace.
So, yeah.
Yeah. You've been busy, Mr. Williams.
Well, it's been a lot of fun. And we've done that because I just felt like that we need to have a very organized declaration about the Gospel of Peace. If we're wrong, we're wrong. We'll find out. But what has happened in this, there's probably 20 something to 30 documents. There may be more. Of just letting the scriptures speak for themselves. We've reaffirmed that, you know, God who was once angry is no longer angry. In fact, we just got another email. We're not going to go into it. It really just kind of boils down to this. Guys, I'll let you respond to this and see what you think. If you don't believe, here is the official declaration. If you don't believe that God was ever angry, you're stupid. Oh, no, that wasn't what I was going to say. We have no problem with that. That is a belief, though. There's no way you can say that you know that based on the scriptures. Mm. The things that we say, we know them for one reason, not because we have revelation, not because we have special insight, not because the two gentlemen with me today are super brilliant, even though they are. But that's not the reason. It's because that's what the scriptures say. And the fact is that to take that position, you are in a belief system. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that that's what the scriptures say. Isaiah 53, everything that you want to declare that you believe about Christ is in Isaiah 53, where's also the gospel of peace, where God declared mm-hmm. that he is no longer going to be angry. And he was going to do that through Christ and redeem the whole world at the same time. So that's, you know, and believe me, we have no, there's not a displeasure. My heart goes out to people that have taken up the position because it's not true. It is scripturally not true. Ethan, what do you think about that?
You know, I just think, how do you miss the part where God says, I'm going to cut you in half and throw down rocks of fire and I'm going to drop you dead instantly? And what about all those verses?
Well, it's there. That is the problem, is that it's in the Hebrew text, and they've had to reduce Moses to absolutely just a angry man who had his own opinions. And but if you do that, you vacate the cross, because we're going to be talking about the structure of the law and the spirituality, the fact that the law is spiritual. We did do a document on that, and we're going to follow up on that. Our conference, oh my gosh. If you haven't, go back and start again. We're getting reports just gobsmacked. I mean, how many times have we done Romans? And yet this time seems that it's just been incredible. Daniel, before we move on, I did rudely interrupt you earlier, but now, what do you think about my response to the issue about to our wonderful friends? I mean, these are people that we really hold dear, but they don't think that God was ever angry.
Yeah, I ring true with that, with what you're saying. I mean, we've built our understanding based that the Hebrew scriptures are the truth. And if you don't agree with that, then of course, as you said, you're going to develop a belief system because you don't have that foundation, the foundation of the Hebrew scriptures. And the Hebrew scriptures, I remember in my dissertation that I did for my doctorate degree, and I think I underwhelmed the number a little bit. I think there was of around 1,000 times that I found that the word wrath or mm-hmm. anger or any of that was used in the Hebrew scriptures. So my question still remains, if those are misconceptions of God, then out of 1,000 times, I mean, where do we draw the line to say what is true and what is not true? What is true of the prophecies of the Christ? What is true of that? If we can't trust it all, then how can we trust mm-hmm. portions of it? And I had a second thought that I've been thinking about the last week about it, because they talk a lot about Jesus. And a discussion I had recently here with some, it was actually Larry and Loretta Huggins. They happen to be kind of in and out of Appleton, Wisconsin as of recent. And the discussion went to hell, and they were kind
of went to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah. So that's been on my mind again, the topic of hell, and I've been kind of rehearsing some of that in my mind, and I started thinking about these teachings that Christ did, and these guys said that Jesus never portrayed this side of God or this image of God. They clearly haven't listened to Jesus either, yeah. Because you think about these teachings about Gehenna fire and judgment that Jesus taught, they were very extreme, very extreme.
Yeah, whatever you define Gehenna as. Yeah,
exactly. And I mean, just the judgment that Christ proclaimed in those teachings were very extreme, and there would be none left. I mean, even Jesus said it himself, that he quotes the prophets, and he said, had not God left, you know, a remnant, then you would be as Sodom and you would be as Gomorrah. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much more wrathful and judgmental and angry can you get than that? So those are my two thoughts, is, you know, what Jesus said about it. Jesus was mm-hmm. quoting the Hebrew scriptures and what the Hebrew scripture said. And if you take all of that out, then how do you get to choose what is true and what's not true?
One of the best points I've ever heard about this is that Jesus quoted the angry God verses and then openly declared that if they were, if this didn't stop, that all of humanity would be consumed by this wrath. That's really profound, Daniel. So we not only have a disagreement with the Hebrew scriptures, you have an incredible disagreement with Christ himself about the Hebrew scriptures and about what those scriptures about wrath mean and what they have to do with him. Yeah. That's a really large hurdle to cross. But if you have discounted the Hebrew scriptures, then that, of course, is your prerogative. We have people that believe everything. I believed a whole hell of a lot of things. And
including hell.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the reasons that I was able to begin to step away from anything. It finally just hit me. There's nothing about hell in the Hebrew scriptures. It ain't there.
Yeah.
No teaching on hell. There's teaching on wrath, but there's no teaching on hell. So, I mean, it's very dynamic. It's not like it's an isolated verse somewhere. But what we end up with is this, you know, Jesus was so nice. And if he was God, how could he be representing this angry dude?
And how the hell do they even come up with the extra additions to hell? You know, the, you know, it doesn't say anything about the seven layers of hell in the Hebrew scriptures. Or the jail cell you're going to have waiting there for you.
Christianity can get pretty graphic about what that is. And so, you know, we're kind of in a unique situation here. We've got every form of belief out there. God's still angry. God was never angry. And all we're doing is saying this is what the scriptures say. And within that context, we'll share with you today, of course, the law is connected to wrath. And also the other thing that's connected to law is death. It's called the law of sin and death. So that's one of the top aspect that's going to be our topic today. Daniel?
Yeah, before we do that, we want to do something real important. And we thank everybody who participated in the conference. A big thank you to our friends in Calgary. I am sure as we come on next week, there will probably be some more feedback. At the time of this recording, the sessions are still being released. People are still listening. It's only a couple days in. And we're anticipating that there's going to be some feedback and some questions. So we'll do some follow-up with that even more next week as we come back to you. But again, big thank you. You know, our friends in Canada, they are huge supporters of the gospel, not only in sharing the gospel, but also in their financial contribution. Really are a true life support to the mission that we have. And with that, we are also due for our pledge drive. So as of this week, we'll be kicking off our spring pledge drive. So want to make sure that you are engaging in that in whatever capacity or level that you can. One of the things that we have been really trying to do is to up our monthly contributions. And for those of you who do contribute monthly, we appreciate that. If you can up it and you can contribute more, that would be a great help. If you don't do a monthly and you know, you participate, you know, quarterly or whatever, maybe consider that. Maybe that could be an option that you could up this year. Maybe things are looking a little better for you and you'd be able to help with that monthly support, which would be really great. There's two ways that you can get involved with that. You can go on to gospelrevolution.com, hit the donate button. On there, you'll find a phone number, you'll find PayPal, you'll find a mailing address, whichever way is convenient for you to give. Or you can also call Michael at
832-318-9339.
And he'd be happy to facilitate that pledge. So again, big thank you to those who have contributed through the conference, especially our friends up in Calgary, Alberta, and Canada. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you to Vic for leading that revolution up there.
Oh my.
And as we go into the spring, we appreciate anyone who can help here.
We do indeed. And we'll wrap this part of it up by saying that we have a lot of new listeners, guys. And we're going to ask you guys to consider the impact that this has had on your life. And how much you would like to see us be able to have a greater impact in the world. We are doing all that we can. I mean, right now we're publishing every day, we foresee just continuing to increase that on every level. Daniel is ready to do that. We've got to get Ethan back on the stick here, producing some videos. I know that he'll be ready. He's full. I'm full of it. I mean, he's full of information, and he really has a lot of good information, and always goes in a way that nobody ever thought. So, Daniel's ready to do a new. I wish everybody could have experienced. I sat here with this dude, and we recorded this entire conference together here, and then he goes to get on the plane, and he starts blowing up my phone. Oh my God! And it's like, where were you?
Something clicked.
It did click, but that's how this happens. And that's why we don't put pressure on people about anything that they believe. Beliefs are difficult to move. And having a previous belief doesn't mean that just because you heard information, that belief is gone. It's a very incredible psychology once you understand the nature of beliefs and that they are not something that should be a part of your spiritual DNA. We've stepped away from the whole issue of personal faith, personal belief, and that leads to other questions, and we love addressing them. But this is just a really good time for those of you that, if you have never started contributing to the Gospel Revolution, we ask you to consider. And also, there's a lot of us getting older, and some of you have even spoken to me and said that, you know, that you don't want everything that you have to go to your wonderful kids. I'm telling you, I'm getting older and my mouth is getting looser. So that's just part of it. So anyway, do something about that. I mean, all you got to do is call up your attorney and or if you've done it online, go in and, you know, change it. And funds aren't going to come rolling into my pocket. They'll go into the Gospel Revolution. And it'll help your estate. Maybe your kids will get actually more by offering a contribution out of the estate. And now we're going to miss you. Don't think we're not going to miss you. We're not just after money, but you know, leave your impact on the gospel. Also, you can do that. You really can do that. And
yeah, all you got to do is just take those kids out of the wheel.
There you go. You know, you've wanted to do it. You threatened them.
The kids are out and the gospel's in.
There you go. I think that's a good choice. I'm going to tell my daughter that.
Again, big thank you to everyone involved in whatever level you can. Really is appreciated. Mm-hmm. I can speak for one as all of the efforts of the Gospel Revolution throughout the years, Michael, the decades that you have put in and all of the others that have been involved. It's worthwhile just for me and my girls. I am so thankful. I've been saved, and thus my girls have been saved from a life of religion. And we have found freedom in Christ, and we enjoy that freedom, and we're living in it and growing in it, in our understanding of it each and every day. And it's because of the Gospel Revolution. So big thank you to all of those through the years who have made that possible for me and my family. I am forever indebted to it.
Yes, and me too. Goodness, there's been many people, actually, not just with contributions, but in other ways that without their contributions, I wouldn't be able to do what I do. And I have learned from every one of you. I'm telling you. You know, there's this defensiveness about owning something or it being your idea or something. We don't have that going on around here. We absolutely, in fact, we accuse each other of just the opposite. Somebody will say something and start telling them, you know, well, when you taught me this or you shared this. No, that was you that did that, not me. And it really does work just the opposite around here. Probably yeah. Because we just really don't care. It's just the truth. And wherever it comes from. But some people do need, and everybody feels the need to know that what they know is known and it's their own. It's not somebody else's information. But you do that by going through those situations like what Daniel did after we did the conference, and then bam, it became his. I mean, he'd already taught on it. I've taught on a lot of things that until years later, I didn't understand what I taught. And I may not understand a thing I say today. So.
So, Michael, recently one of those conversations that sparked something inside of you was with Al Vitale, and it was regarding the law and a statement that you have made through the decades for a long time. And that's what the letter that you mentioned a few moments ago was about. So tell us about that conversation you had with Al.
I wish I could. It was it was so enlivening, and I don't know whether it's my memory or just the fact that it was just such a jolt to me that I don't remember the exact conversation. We'll have to get Al on here to tell it, I suppose. But it just became very clear in that conversation that I had made a misrepresentation of the law. And I saw myself making this statement, reading it as I'd done, saying that the law is spiritual, and then start to walk around. I tend to walk around a little bit when I'm teaching up in front, but I could see myself doing that. And then turning and saying, see, Paul says the law was spiritual. And now that's the gospel. So I made that. I created this law versus grace. In fact, that's the title of many of the things. But this is not law versus grace. We do need to understand that the law, the commandments, the law of commandments was completely fulfilled. And also the prophecies of the law. There's a lot of prophecy in the law also, because that's the Torah. I don't think a lot of Christians have ever had this distinction drawn. So, Daniel, if you were to tell people what the distinction is, there two clear distinctions that we have run together. How would you explain that to people?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Paul makes the mention of it, and he calls it the law of commandments. And then, of course, we have what, you know, when we talk about the Hebrew scriptures, and Jesus says that in the law, the Psalms and the prophets, now the law that he's referring to is greater than just the law of commandments, but he's talking about the Torah, which are the first five books of the Bible. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy.
You can get past that.
I just can't. So I think that's the big distinction. When we talk about the law, are we talking about the law of commandments? Or are we talking about the law as a whole? Speaking of the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, which does contain the law of commandments.
That's excellent. I've never heard anybody explain it any better than that. Ethan, how did that strike you? I mean, you've been a part of the gospel, and you and I have had so many conversations of the law versus grace. Did that ring true to you? I mean, were you, or did it just, I don't know why we're making such a big deal out of it, but how'd that do?
Well, I mean, really, it unveiled the obvious to me. It forced me to think in the most simplistic terms, like, well, if the law is from God, then Yeah, that makes it spiritual, I think.
You're getting deep on us now.
So it's just, I mean, it's like getting hit upside the head with the obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a very clear statement, and it's right, because I think that's exactly what I felt. Was I felt a little dumb that, well, this is just duh, this is just obvious. But sometimes that's the way truth hits. Truth is obvious; it always is. It's other things that has made it to where that we can't see it. Just the same as the Hebrew text and the description of what happened in the New Testament, how that they were blinded and they couldn't see, they couldn't hear. Jesus made that comment several times. So the issue became, for me, Paul stating that the law to this day had the power to be a veil that would keep people from seeing. So I saw that there was still a power in the law to blind. If it has a power to blind people, it's still more than just laws. It's still more than just books. Mm-hmm. But what he was saying was that in their context in which they read it, it's a veil over their face.
Mm. Yeah. And after coming into this, I'd say now it's the law that reveals. It's
absolutely.
It shows us the nature of the new creation.
It does both, doesn't it? It really comes down along the lines just whether or not you accept the Hebrew scriptures as valid, because in that context, you're going to find both things, a law that blinds and a law that reveals.
Yeah, and if we apply the hermeneutics that we learned in the conference, that's the other side of that. If you're looking at the law as being divine to you personally, to this day, then yeah, definitely a blinding factor, a veil. But if you see it as divine to divine, all of a sudden the veil comes off and you see Christ.
And that really is the key, Daniel. And I love that you pointed that out, because the law is not a reflection, or what I like to call a sliding scale of levels of righteousness. Mm-hmm. That man can acquire. Yeah. This is not earth to divine measuring system. This is God's righteousness. This is divine to divine, that only God himself in Christ could fulfill his own law.
Well, that's very true. And Paul went into a great deal of detail about that. If you've broken one law, you've broken them all. You know, there's not a sliding scale, as Ethan was saying. And Paul made that very clear. So the law was there to reveal sin. It didn't.
Yeah.
And as Paul said, the law never made a man a sinner. Mm-hmm. The power of the law to reveal sin. So the gospel reveals righteousness. The law reveals sin. If you don't have a revelation of sin, you can never have a revelation of the gospel, because it's not until you see the all-inclusiveness of what the law proclaims about sin, is that all are under sin, you'll never see the allness of grace and the allness of the gospel.
Mm-hmm. And I like what you said yesterday, Mike, that the law is, I am God, you are man, and that's a problem.
That's a pretty simple equation, isn't it? Now, our process has been to find out what that problem was. But if there was no problem, then the cross is completely vacated of any thing of accomplishing anything. And that's very clear. That's why it is disturbing to us, is that those who speak, the proponents of this belief system that God was never angry, they openly declare that the cross is void. And that is disturbing, that someone would think, after someone's life being prophesied about throughout, a couple of thousand years of history, and then Christ come, and then we still use that name. That name, whatever that means to anybody, means nothing. Yeah. If he didn't do anything, it was just symbolic. It was it just turned into a story.
And I would add that in Christianity, it makes the cross void by creating levels of righteousness. I would say they connect the human, and that's what I mean by a sliding scale of righteousness, is they connect the human to the divine.
Yeah.
You're divine, but now you have to walk out your faith. You got the spirit in you, now you have to walk it out. You have to you have to go up and down the scale.
So if there's a scale, what you're saying is, if we've been redeemed from the scale, then there had to be a scale. What is that scale? It's no scale. Because how the only way you can get into righteousness for everybody is if all were in one state and they've all become into another state. That's the only way it works. And Paul's euphoria is that God has declared all in unbelief that he might have mercy on them.
Christianity created the scale. There was no scale before. It was just you are in sin, and I'm God, and I'm righteous, and that's it.
Yeah. Mm. And of course, the big picture for us at this moment is that God's plan was always to vacate heaven and to live in humanity. And that's where we are persuaded that the Hebrew text and the Hebrew scriptures and the work of the cross has brought all of this, that heaven and earth now are not a future one location. It's already there. And God or man are already one, not a future consequence. That has already been realized, and 2,000 years of suppression of that truth is why we have to speak fairly boldly about this reality, because we're not finding a whole lot of voices out there saying it.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. And it's amazing. Christianity, they teach that the law is how we're getting to the new creation. But I want to say today, I want to declare on the show that the law is built into the new creation.
Mm, that's good. Because it's the structure.
The structure.
Yeah. Well, Daniel?
You know, I think a good thing for us to do here at this point is I'd like to go over that article that you put together, Michael, and sent it out. Yeah, I want to take advantage that we hope that all of our listeners are absorbing all the information we're putting out there, but maybe you haven't seen the letter. And I think it would be fitting for us to go through this. This is something that we posted on the newsletter, and I'll point that out. If you didn't get it, maybe it's because you're not subscribed to the newsletter. So go to gospelrevolution.com, hit the newsletter link at the top, and you can subscribe to the newsletter. This is where we're sending out right now. We're sending out all these articles. We're sending out the conference videos are coming out that way. Another way to connect is through our Facebook page, The Gospel Revolution. And of course, as the conference is going out, that was done on video. You can see that at youtube.com, Gospel Revolution, and the number one, Gospel Revolution 1 on YouTube. But this letter, Michael, I think was very fitting. It talks about, you know, your experience in Word of Faith and with Vic, and it also develops this structure. And if I start reading this and you want to stop along the way and make some comments, just let's go about it that way and kind of use this as a talking point.
All right.
We interrupt this program for the following message. Beep. You know, I think at this point we should have those little color bars go across the screen. Michael says, something I was raised hearing on the television was the phrase, we interrupt this program for the following message. This is that kind of moment. For several years, I have contemplated what was incomplete or misunderstood in my teaching of the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace. When I first began declaring the truths openly, first within the Word of Faith churches and later in other parts of the world, something powerful happened. The message spread. Lives were transformed. The burden of condemnation lifted from many. I watched it unfold with gratitude. But over time, I also watched something else unfold. Some began concluding that God was never angry. Some concluded that the law had no spiritual bearing. Others drifted into positions that effectively rendered the cross unnecessary, reducing it to a revelation rather than fulfillment. I searched for the fracture. In a conversation with my longtime friend and fellow gospel revolutionary, Al Vitale, we struck what I can only describe as a live wire. I cannot recount every word spoken, but I remember the thunderclap that followed. The fracture was not first in my mystic friends. The fracture was in my own language. I had framed law versus grace. I was wrong. Wrong.
There's none.
By presenting law and grace as competing realities, I unintentionally created a vacuum. By speaking as though the law were merely external, judicial, or inferior, and grace spiritual, I fractured the architecture of the law. God did not destroy the law, he fulfilled it. Fulfillment does not mean cancellation, it means completion. The jurisdictions of the law was satisfied. The righteousness revealed in the law was not abolished, it was embodied. The law is not merely threats that drive someone to Christ, it is structure. Michael, if I can just stop there for a second.
Sure.
One of the points that really stood out to us as we talked about this yesterday and gone over the letter again was the fracture of the architecture of the law. Mm. And in the second part of this letter, you're going to start to lay out the structure and what is the structure and how the law had built the structure in order for it to work on. And that was one of the things, another article that you posted here a few days ago, one that I sent to a couple of the people who had questions about the anger of God, was that the fact that the anger of God was confined within this structure.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as the law came into play, there also came a structure for the anger and the wrath, which is tied in with judgment. And I think that was absolutely a beautiful way to do that. But as with any fractal of the gospel, fractal nature of the gospel, if you take out any one of these things, the whole thing collapses. For instance, Jesus said that when the Holy Spirit teaches about the work of Christ, he's going to teach us about sin, righteousness, and judgment. Now, if we remove any one of those things, the whole thing collapses. If you remove the judgment, then there is no righteousness. If you don't have judgment, you don't have righteousness. If you don't have sin, you don't have judgment. So it's all required for it to all work together. And that's not something that we created by religion. That is the structure that was created through law.
Yeah, and that is Christ himself that declared this very... I think that's one of the only things. I do think it's in every book of the Gospels of Jesus giving this direction. Evidently, it was quite important. But even if it's only in there in one book, it doesn't make it less important. This is a structural validation of the law, the Torah, and also of what the law of commandments was supposed to do and accomplish. Yeah. So the power of this is that God not only was angry, he funneled that anger into a structure system. And then at the end of that structure, he had himself waiting for that judgment. Mm. And so it's really powerful. But if this was all just hidden in heaven, then why would he just do it? But it was manifested to many people. God did direct his anger toward people. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get that if this is divine to you, you're in trouble.
Yeah, right.
Mm. And I just want to add, I remember reading in Psalms once, in this one, the language became very clear on this issue, that it was doing a flashback to the Exodus and to the Passover when the angel of death went to take the firstborn sons of Egypt. And it literally called the angel of death the instrument of God's wrath.
Wow.
Mm.
So, there's no doubt in my mind that God demonstrated his wrath through instruments such as angels or the law, whatever it shall be.
Yeah. And we can look in any part of the Hebrew text and you're going to find this. This is one of the most consistent things. Other than that, you're going to find the most consistent thing is prophecies about Christ. Mm-hmm. So and we've described it for decades now as the two tracks of the Hebrew text and prophecy. And that is judgment's coming, judgment's coming, judgment's coming, and that judgment being demonstrated. And then, of course, the other track was a redeemer's coming, a redeemer's coming, a redeemer's coming. Mm-hmm. But this structure literally funneled everything to Christ. So when we get into, as you'll see just a little bit later in the letter, I do present the structure in which God funneled his wrath into. The law of commandments simply shows you're not getting away from judgment. That's the law concludes mm-hmm. all to be sinners. So the issue then is, where does this wrath go? It's not, is there any wrath? It is, where does it go? And is mm-hmm. there a system that God, instead of just out, flinging thunderbolts, as we're given to think, did he have a structure? Yes, he gave it structure. The very mm-hmm. priesthood was part of the structure. The sacrificial system was part of the structure. And he set all these things up so that every human mind could know for sure that when these things happen, for sure, this is how the anger and wrath of God culminated. Mm-hmm. And Christianity missed it altogether. They all, almost all of them, feel that he's still angry. And especially those who don't make it to heaven, that's God's still angry. He would put you there, but they try to answer, how would a loving God throw you in hell? Well, that's your choice. I don't think anybody that would stand and have a clear revelation of heaven and a clear revelation of hell would say, nah, I'm going down here. Say, let's get the party started. There's no party. when there's wrath of God, which we now understand that that place never existed at all. But Christianity relegates that to your choice, and which is just nonsensical. Finally, after saying it for decades, I finally realized how nonsensical what I was saying was.
Mm. I just had a flashback of listening to Kenneth Copeland, and the statement stuck in my head for many years. And, he gets those beady eyes and he looks into the camera and he says, when the God of love becomes the God of war. And then from there, you try to dismantle this whole thing. You try to mix this whole system, the old system and the new system, and try to make it run together. And it just doesn't work. Yeah. And I'm seeing that more clearly, even as we're discussing this here. That was kind of a law versus grace comparison. Yeah. But if we see, this is coming to mind when Paul talked about it in Romans chapter 5. He says, moreover, the law entered that the offense might abound. But where sin abounded, which is brought forth because of the law, grace abounded much more. Notice it doesn't say that he came in and obliterated the law. He obliterated sin, but he didn't obliterate the law. But rather, it's almost the picture that I'm getting is that grace was built upon the law. And without that law as a foundation, there is no structure in which grace can work.
Yes, I think that's a wonderful insight. And that that structure gives us the clarity. Without structure, there's no clarity. Like I said, you know, earlier, you can believe anything. I mean, why would we be upset with people because they believe something? I've spent 50 years trying to not believe anything. And a lot of people have seen the value of that is to just canceling out every single belief. I have no beliefs. I want to know something. That kind of lines up with Paul's experience, even though he never had a sit down talk to Jesus while he was here with the disciples. Paul's whole thing was not believing in Christ. His whole thing was knowing Christ. Mm-hmm. He said, I want to understand the his resurrection so that I can know him. Mm-hmm. If I don't understand the resurrection, I will never know him. How do you know him? You have to understand the resurrection. Why was there a resurrection? If you've got a resurrection, you've got a dead body there. Mm-hmm. So how can you understand the cross, and how can you know Christ and through his resurrection when you don't know what put him in the grave?
Yeah.
So this is all very intricately put together, and we didn't put it together. You know, that's, sometimes I feel like that people are viewing this as that we put this together. We didn't put this together. This is what the text says. And if we had nothing but Isaiah 53, everything that we've said so far fits within that text. It has both sides of that story, and they're not verses, one versus the other. It's just like we read in John. And I realized that the statement is written there with a little italicized word, but it says grace and truth. The law came by Moses, and that's where a lot of our friends say, see, came by Moses. It means it came through Moses. Even as Ethan was speaking about the angelic realm, the fact that the law came by Moses, but now that little but should be spanked, I'm telling you, because it is part of what helped create a grace versus law mentality in me, because it is not the law was given by Moses, but they are put on equal planes. The but, even as they were at least honest enough about to put italicized, it is two statements. The law came by Moses, grace and truth came by Christ. They have equal standing, at least in the writer's view, according to John. And this is in the first chapter of John. So this is what happened to me, is this cascading event started. And I started, it's like, I feel like I've never read the Bible before. And some of the most simple statements. So they really did begin to cascade. So this whole structure of, Daniel, take us to that. Do you need to finish the letter first, or?
Yeah, I'll because the letters were right there.
We're at right the structure. There. Okay, go ahead.
So it is, speaking of the law, it is structure. It is the structure of sacrifice. It is the structure of priesthood. It is the structure of covenant mediation. It is the structure of blood atonement. Mm. It is the structure of blessing and curse. It is the structure of death and consequence. It is the structure of substitution. It is the structure of access and veil. It is the architecture that makes the resurrection intelligible. I would quote, the law is spiritual, and lift my head triumphantly as if I had secured the point. Yet in other places when I spoke of the law, as though it were merely a foil to grace. The very teacher who insists on context and textual precision was quietly operating under confirmation bias. I was mistaken. I say that without heaviness and without self-condemnation. The gospel of peace carries no condemnation, even for those who have mischaracterized parts of it. The gospel of peace and the gospel of grace have transformed existence for me and for thousands of others. That remains true. But grace is not opposed to law. There is one righteous, the law revealed it, Christ fulfilled it, and the resurrection vindicated it. By mischaracterizing the law as something spiritually inferior or obsolete, I inadvertently open the space for grace to be mischaracterized as something unnecessary. When structure is removed, poetry floats untethered. When covenant architecture is dismissed, fulfillment loses its foundation. To every gospel revolutionary and to anyone in the world who has heard the gospel of peace as I have taught it and moved on because of what felt like inconsistency, I write this in love. I looked for the fracture in others. I found it in my own language. Let us clear the debris and move forward. No more careless framing of law versus grace. No more mischaracterizing Christ's fulfillment. No more competition where there is only completion. There is one righteousness, one covenant fulfilled, one resurrection vindicating divine righteousness, and one peace secured through completion. With resolution and gratitude, Michael.
Thank you for reading that, Daniel. This is the part I want to go back to now, because when Don and I were at this point trying to work through these things, because I don't care what the answer is, I just want the answers, right? I know that's the attitude of everybody that I know. But we got to this point where that we were seeing completion so much that we fell into this trap. We felt we had to choose between substitution and completion. That is a false narrative. That is a false comparison. That is a false choice. And I remember very well being going into that. And you'll go back and hear some of the times when me and Don were there. And I began to say, we really are more persuaded that this is about, and I remember the statement, this is more about completion than it is about substitution. Mm. That's a lie. It's equally about substitution as it is about completion. Mm-hmm. It made me question. See, I've questioned myself, guys that have talked to me about this. I've seriously considered it. And there's even statements that show you that I considered it and even said it out loud. Sometimes I don't know how stupid I am until I open my mouth, right? So, and this time it took me a while to realize how that I myself was creating a false comparison. And by elevating that, oh no, we think that this is more about completion than it is substitution. That is just that. You can bleep it out. That's bullshit. I cannot believe that I ever said that, because this is not a choice between the two. And that is part of the false narrative that gets established here. And I admit that I was drawn to it. Now, this has been confession time for me here. So I would love to hear from both of you guys about this issue of being pressed into that. I know I pressed people into that. And I'm telling you that I was wrong.
Well, I'll begin with my confession. I'm walking up to the altar right now to confess, brother.
Come on, brother. God will forgive you.
Well, I mean, I think that when I first started learning the gospel, you know, I had to break out of the circular logic of, okay, I get grace to get saved, and then that gets me into practicing the things of the law. Okay, so I need grace to get into the law, which doesn't even make any sense. And then when I break the law, I need grace to repair the laws I broke. So it's just an endless circular logic that I had to break out of. So when I first started learning the gospel, I was like, shoo-shoo law, you know, just shoo-shoo. I don't want nothing to do with it. You know, there's nothing good about that. You know, I just don't want anything to do with it at all. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of slowed down the process of learning.
Well, it did.
Because I didn't, I just saw that as cutoff, completion has nothing to do with us now.
Yeah.
Instead of looking and going line by line and seeing that the law reveals to us the completion.
The structure.
Reveals to us the structure of the new creation. Instead, I mean, it was almost like a trauma, being like afraid to go near it.
Well, and I have to tell you that I remember our conversations, and at the point at which you came into beginning to understand the gospel, and then the massive part, of course, Don and I were doing the shows. And I supported that mentality. I want you to see how that what we say makes a whole lot of difference in how people begin to grow. And so my words would have supported that conflict, that unreasonable conflict that Ethan had. And wouldn't have even known that that's what was happening.
But, you know, I realized, like, at the time it was necessary to separate those two things because I had to break out of the circular thinking of Christianity.
Took the cleaver, didn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Daniel?
That vicious cycle. You're bringing up memories, you know, because that's another one on the list was blessing and cursing, you know, this whole rotation. The one that you talked about earlier about, you know, the sliding scale, you know, that this was, you know, we used to work on our treasure bank in heaven, right? You know, store up for yourself treasures in heaven, and that in our mansion in heaven that we would have a box of treasures. And I mean, all of that doesn't even make sense anymore. Why would you need treasure for a city that's the streets are made out of gold? I don't know.
It's a treasure. The treasure is it. Yeah.
Well, then there was levels to that. I remember being at a cookout with my dad's family. And of course, my dad's family is more chill and he's more religious. So they were asking him, you know, I probably won't get a mansion, but we'll at least get a shack.
Yeah.
So it's like there's levels to the afterlife too.
Yeah,
my dad used to teach that. He used to teach in heaven that there were different places, you know, some closer to the throne room. And I did air quotes. I forget sometimes that we're not on video, but
we saw,
you know, some were closer to the, the throne room, but somewhere outside the city. And they were just thankful and grateful. I think Jesse Duplantis and his great famous video that he made of his so-called vision or dream or journey to heaven, he talked about people that were outside of the city that were just so thankful to be at least close.
And I was told that those are the people that after the thousand year reign, the devil's going to come and steal them out of heaven.
Oh, Lord.
I think I read that too. So you can take all of that silly stuff, and it really was silly. You can take all that silly stuff and fabricate this whole system in which you can continue the works and all of that, or you can see the story, the gospel story that remains. You can see the structure. You can see the architecture. You can see the creation that God used to declare not only to them in times past, but, you know, as you read the story too, you also think about how their eyes were blinded and they couldn't see the end result as we can. They couldn't see the full motion of it. But now as we look at it with eyes unveiled and we look at it as something that happened, something that was there, a structure that was built, and now see the completion of that and then the new that was built on top of that, we can see the whole story. And that is why the law is still spiritual, because the law still speaks. Mm-hmm. The law still declares the structure of righteousness. The law still declares this.
I think as we wrap this up, this issue of, this really just startled me just a few minutes ago when I realized what I had done as you read that list, and this trying to choose between was Christ's work substitutional or was it a completion? And that's what I want us to go out with on this, guys, because that is a necessary to embrace both of those. I remember it just being presented as a either or, just the same as the God is or is not angry because Christ is or is not this. But this is also a false choice that is in that narrative, that they remove substitution, they remove blood sacrifice, they remove all of that because the issue is completion. But the completion happened through a structure of substitution and priesthood, all of it.
And I actually have two verses here I'd like to read that have that demonstrate that it's both.
Awesome.
I have one from Jeremiah chapter 3:16. It says, "In those days when your numbers have increased greatly in the land, declares the Lord, people will no longer say the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. It will never enter their minds or be remembered. It will not be missed, nor will another one be made." Mm-hmm. And then I think this verse in Revelation expands upon that. It says, Revelation 21, verse 22, "I do not see a temple in the city," referring to the New Jerusalem, "in the new creation, because the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple."
Mm. Awesome. We accept the work of the cross. We accept the penalty of cross. We accept that Paul's need to know Christ come from understanding his resurrection. If you've got a man who's resurrected, you need to know why and how he died. If you don't know why and how he died, then his resurrection becomes inconsequential. But there was a reason that he died. There was a structure under which he died. And it was very exact. It was not, there was no loose room. This had to happen exactly this way.
Substituted and completed by God. Yes. There's no Ark of the Covenant because I'm the Ark. I'm the temple.
Absolutely.
In the city.
And you would not know this one had we not known the other one.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to prophesy that in the next couple sessions that we come with you, we're going to start looking at the structure. I mean, goodness, you gave us a great list here, Michael. We could spend a show on each one of these, on sacrifice, on priesthood, on covenant mediation, the blood atonement, substitution, access in the veil. I mean, each one of these is going to be a great teaching point, a great vantage point for us to look and to see how law is not against grace or grace against law.
Wow. Well, I feel that this has been very needed, and it's following through with the impact that I experienced when I was talking with Al Vitale. So, you know, a lot of times those moments come and you know that it's like something that is kind of fleeting and you'll remember it someday. This was not one of those. This one was a bam. It was absolutely a thunderclap, as I described in the newsletter. And I knew that follow-up on this was going to be necessary. And now Daniel's laid out a way for us to show you the structure and why substitution. Man, this has been a big topic, and we really do need to cover it because I vacillated on it. And so we need to see what the scriptures say. But my understanding right now is that we were being pressed into a false choice between the substitutionary work of Christ and the completed work of Christ.
And so it is. We must leave you, family and friends. If you'd like to know anything about the Gospel Revolution, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And make that big, fat pledge today. Or you can go to gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate button. You can also find us on your favorite social media networks, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Please be sure to hit that subscribe, share, and like button on whatever platform you're listening. Now it's good night from Daniel Rouse in The Sun is Shining in the Frozen Tundra.
And it's good night from Michael Williams here. Yeah, it's 5:30 and we still have, do we? Oh, yes, we do still have daylight. I had to look out. Salvation has arrived. Wintertime is just that to me. It's hell on earth. So salvation has arrived.
And it's good night from William Massengill in the lovely south of Spain.
And what's the name of your town? You couldn't move to one. You were going to one I could pronounce. And I looked it up and all that. And then, oh, yeah, I'm not there.
Yes, from the town of Jerez de la Frontera.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. place. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Why couldn't you have stuck with Granada? Jesus. All right, guys. We love you guys so much. These shows, we'd do them, Daniel and I and Ethan all would profess to you that we'd do them if nobody were listening. Because we learn so much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, there's this resolution at the end by changing the vocabulary of law versus grace. Do you see how this progresses? Mm-hmm. Now we've been removed from this false choice of substitution versus completion. Mm-hmm. When you get your vocabulary wrong, you just don't know how far it extends into structuring what you think is the truth.
We sure hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast. And remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again next week, only
better.
Knocking on the door, you're begging to come in, yeah. Unaware that all the wild love's been knocking from within. You are the love you seek, a perfect yet unique, righteous and holy. Gotta be nothing to complete. It's not a thing that you need, you're the love. Just remember to breathe and take a second off. Look, I'm just trying to remind you that you're perfectly divine, flawlessly designed. When you're lost and
deconstructing religion and barbecuing the sacred cows of Christianity before your very eyes, you are listening to
The Gospel Revolution.